Fantasy Edge with Jonathan Chan, Kevin Kuo, Richard Seville.
Yeah, it is the Fantasy Edge on Monday Night Football recap. What a wild Monday Night game we had to start, you know, the first Monday Night cast. Now, there is another game that is going on as we are taping, and that is Denver at Oakland, so we won't be able to get to that. I'm Richard Seville, FantasySixPack.net, and joining me shortly is Jonathan Chan and Kevin Ho. Jono, did you watch this game? Did you get to see any of it? I know that you have things to do in the evening, but did you catch any?
I saw Hopkins touchdown in the first, and then I couldn't watch any of the rest of it. I saw the highlights of the kicks, though. That was cool.
The highlights of the kicks?
Yeah, lots of game-winning field goal.
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, I guess that's the most important part. It's where the Saints won the game. Kind of historic, a real heartbreaker for Deshaun Watson after taking them down the field with less than a minute to go, where you think they almost won, and it almost went to overtime. I bet you now the Texans wish it went to overtime because they probably would have had an extra chance, but with Breeze using that, you know, the slimmest, what did he have, like 34 seconds to do it? What about you, Kev? Thoughts on this game, and did you see it?
Yeah, I mean, it was an exciting game. I thought it was a little sloppy in the first half with the Saints, not really having it all together, but they got it going in the second, and they made it an interesting game. I don't know. It was a good game. It didn't go how I expected, but I thought it was a good game.
Well, I'm just hunting around for some statistics for the game, but I do know this, that DeAndre Hopkins, because of his performance, he made the top five wide receivers. We'll get to that in a little bit later. And also, Alvin Kamara squeaked into the top 10, just ahead of Le'Veon Bell. Deshaun Watson came in third. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. We'll try to get you some statistics. Like we're doing this show just on the heels of the Monday Night game. So I want to bring you up to date. So in this show, we'll talk about those performers here and there, the ones that stand out for us. And, oh, I see you've got some stats here, Kev. Ah. Watson, 268, 3 touchdowns and 1 interception, and 40 yards on the ground. That's pretty good. Jono, any thoughts on these statistics? Breeze, not too bad either.
Breeze did pretty well. It's good he shook off whatever he was feeling at the end of last season when he struggled. Big one for me is Hopkins. He has, 8 catches, 111 yards, 2 touchdowns, but he had a few, drops. I think he had 4 drops, 3 or 4 drops in the game.
It was, yeah.
Not like him, but could have been a way, way, way bigger night.
And he got an unnecessary roughness penalty. Do you believe
it? Oh, that was a beautiful suplex. Beautiful suplex.
I loved it when it happened. It was great. Kev, thoughts on Carlos Hyde in this game? 10 carries for 83 yards. Didn't score, but he's definitely a part of this.
Yeah, unfortunately. I thought we were going to see more of Duke as every down back. But Hyde actually looked pretty good. I can't really hate too much. 10 carries for 83 yards, like you said. He looked, he was running pretty decisively, pretty powerfully. I think he's a good complement to Duke. I think you're going to see kind of a 50-50 split depending on how the game goes in that backfield. So not too happy about that. But anyone who believed in Hyde probably has, I don't know, maybe a flex RB.
Jono, 7 targets for Ginn. What do we make of him in fantasy now?
I mean, Ginn's always been the same player, especially with New Orleans. He can have, 7 this week, but next week he could have 3. Still 90 yards with a 70-yard bomb thrown in there, but, he's still good. He has good rapport with Breeze. He's been there for a while now, and he is and probably one of the best ball players if you play in a league like that, but he's always been consistent with Breeze, and excellent big play threat on every down.
Kev, the second wide receiver on the Texans, Will Fuller. I only recall him making one big catch. Of course, Stills went in for the touchdown. After Nuke, what have we got?
I think you almost have kind of like a committee of receivers. I don't think that's a term, but it's something that kind of does exist with this Houston receiving core. I don't think anyone really stands out. Will Fuller had 2 targets, had caught them both for 69 yards, including that long one. Stills had 3 targets, caught them all, including that touchdown. But nothing really too usable. DeAndre Hopkins just dominated the target share with 13 targets. Duke Johnson had 5 targets, so that's nice in half-point PPR leagues. But in that Houston, it's going to be week to week. It's going to be better for best ball than weekly, some weeks you're not going to know who exactly to start. It's going to be pretty frustrating, especially for Fuller owners.
Let's get into some fantasy headlines, some injuries that happened. Most notably, Nick Foles, broken clavicle. It looks like he's going to be out. He's on IR, eligible to return. Garden Minshew, Jono. He played all right, actually.
I mean, he played better than all right. He set the record for completion percentage for any player with at least 15 pass attempts in their debut. And it was a franchise single game record for players with at least 25 pass attempts. He is already the best quarterback in Jaguars history. Not really, but still. He played great. He completed 22 of 25 passes. Granted, it was against the Chiefs' garbage time defense, but still, he didn't look out of place. DJ Chark and Chris Connolly looked useful, which was crazy to me. And good game all around for the Jags offense. Just the defense was understandably shredded.
Yes, but the Chiefs defense is not one of the better ones. Kev, value like I think I talked up DJ Chark a little bit. That a lot of people are saying that he's a guy to keep your eye on. D.D. Westbrook did score a touchdown, but it was actually Chark who looked more effective. What do you make of this beyond Leonard Fournette? What do you think it's going to be going forward without Foles?
I don't know. It looks like Minshew is kind of the guy who kind of throws it all around. He didn't really focus on anyone too much. I think they all might have value, but I think the one thing that we can come out of here for certain is that D.D. Westbrook isn't the clear number one that we might have thought he was. He's a little bit closer to guys like Chark and Conley than thought. So, I mean, it'll be interesting. I tend to believe that Minshew is not going to be that good. I mean, he showed a little bit, but the Chiefs defense really stinks. I mean, we'll see next week. I think they have the Texans who aren't a fantastic defense either. So, I don't know. Maybe he'll keep it going, but it's hard for me to believe in a guy named Gardner Minshew.
Right. And I'll continue with you on Tyreek Hill. He's out a few weeks. We don't know exactly. I mean, whenever I hear a story like he won't need surgery, I mean, you know, that's still pretty bad. Tyreek Hill, Kev, I guess obviously Sammy Watkins is, I guess, a WR1.
I don't know about a WR1, but high end WR2 probably is where I'd put him. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue if you want to put him a WR1. I'd have to take a look at it. But yeah, I mean, if this is what he looks like now that he's supposedly healthy and has a full year in an offense and Tyreek Hill's target share is going to go to him, if you drafted Sammy Watkins late, you're looking good.
It's actually what it is that Watkins was actually, two of his touchdowns came, I do believe, before Hill went out. So I don't know what's going on there. But anyways, Watkins, I actually think it probably helps Watkins if Hill's out there. Darius Geis, Jono, out for a few weeks with a knee. I guess they bring back AP.
Yeah, they do. I mean, he's undisputed the early down and goal line back now. Chris Thompson's always going to have his role as the passing down guy. He got 10 targets on Sunday, so that's, I don't think he can go too much higher than that without hurting himself. So Thompson stays put as a solid passing down PPR back, but yeah, AP's back, rushed for over 1,000 yards last year, and players in Washington seem to be upset that he wasn't active, so maybe he's the same guy that can do pretty well for you.
Yeah, I think so, and I mean, he's probably just as good. I think this is kind of the year of the old guys getting in there. Like, look at McCoy, he's doing it, and Gore doing it. You know, it's turned into the season of the vets, I guess. Speaking of vets, we almost lost Joe Mixon. Apparently, the low-level sprain is only day-to-day. He may play on Sunday, but Gio Bernard, not exactly an old vet like the other guys, but you know, he's been around the league a long time. And so, Kev, any worries about Joe Mixon? I'm not talking about the injuries, but his performance in against Seattle.
Not worries per se. I mean, it's kind of just, at least we see that, you know, Cincinnati's going to move the ball. So that's a good thing. If there's any worries, it's the same things as before. Like Gio is going to take a lot of work and, you know, he's kind of injury prone guy. So, not too worried. I wouldn't like move on from him or anything like that, but I was never really a high on Mixon to begin with. And, we're kind of seeing a couple of the reasons why.
Right. That pretty much wraps it up for our headlines. But before we leave the headlines, I think what we should talk about is we got to talk about Antonio Brown. I've never seen such a wild weekend of ups and downs. And first he was going to be playing on Monday, and that was on late Friday. Antonio Brown is back. He's going to play Monday night, like right now in this game that we're having our podcast up against. But that wasn't to be. He was cut by the team, which seems, I don't know about you guys, but it seemed a little fishy to me, Kev, this whole affair, that he suddenly ends up on the Patriots.
Yeah, it's very Belichickian, I guess, that he signed with the Patriots like 3 minutes after he cleared waivers. Like, can you even hash out the details of a contract in 3 minutes? Like, have you guys ever tried to like hire someone? You can't hire someone in 3 minutes. How do you negotiate terms in 3 minutes?
It seemed like a big setup. It did. It really seems like a big setup. Like, boom, he's already with the Patriots. But I mean, I'll tell you one thing. Belichick doesn't put up with crap. Like, Jono, I don't think really this affects Edelman's value, really.
No, Edelman's always good. I guess he'll have a few fewer targets with Brown there. Edelman's still going to be the main slot guy, like the move the chains guy. I think this affects mostly is James White. Now we have, you know, another receiver out there, and White's role in the passing game, it'll still be there, but the volume won't be as big. I think White's the biggest, White and Dorsett would be the two biggest losers in this when Brown starts to play.
And Kev, I'll let you go on about Josh Gordon. Since Antonio Brown is,
do that?
You can. You both can go have a chin wag about Josh Gordon and Antonio Brown drawing the coverage.
I just, Jonathan, I hate you, Matt. Like, what the hell? Like, what is? How do you go from like the receiving core you had 3 weeks ago to Antonio Brown, Josh Gordon, Julian Edelman, a first round pick coming off IR, Demaryius Thomas, who apparently is not washed anymore, Jacoby Myers, who apparently is the greatest undrafted rookie receiver of all time. And then you also have some dude named Gunner wearing Danny Amendola's jersey, just looking like a great returner. Like, it's ridiculous. It's just, I'm tired of this shit. Like,
like you said, 3 weeks ago, we were looking like one of the worst receiving cores in the league. And now all of a sudden we have by far the best. And it's incredible.
3 weeks ago, we thought Jacoby Myers was going to be like the number one starter receiver. And now he's like the wide receiver 5. Like, this doesn't make any sense.
Nope. It's fun for me, though.
I hate it.
And not only that, Dorsett is good.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about Dorsett.
And Burkhead. Burkhead's good. Burkhead was effective. Every time he touched the ball, he's effective. He was, you know, picking up yardage here and there. They've got good players. They've got depth everywhere. Everywhere. I mean,
it's a good thing there's depth. Let's talk about how ineffective Sony looked. 14 yards on 15 carries. Ugly.
Yeah.
Who cares? One of your other running guys.
That's true.
That's a good way to lead right into our top Sunday performance, because top Sunday performance. Let's start with the quarterbacks. Number one, Kev, your guy, Lamar.
Yeah, I mean, I've been trying to tell people that he's not that bad of a passer. Yeah, I mean, it was impressive. It looked like the offense was really geared towards his strengths. He was dropping dimes left and right. Granted, there was absolutely no pressure in his face, but Marquise Brown went for 140 yards and 2 touchdowns on like 12 snaps. So, I don't know. It's obviously like not going to be repeatable like over and over again. I mean, next week they got the Cardinals, so you might be in for another big Lamar Jackson game, but, clearly just shows his upside. The whole offense is explosive. We're more downfield. The running attack really opens up, downfield passing lanes. So, I'm expecting big things from Lamar Jackson this year. I think I told you guys like early on I was, and, taking a small victory lap because it was still the Dolphins.
Jono, Derrick Henry, we were kind of down on him as being sort of a low to middle RB2, but it turns out, I don't know, looks like he might have RB1 potential carrying on from where he ended up last year.
I mean, he did how he always gets his big points, right? He rattled off a few very, very big plays, but in between them, he didn't look all that good. So, I mean, it's the Derrick Henry we expected. As soon as he gets momentum and gets going, you're not going to tackle him. But if you hit him at the line, and then he's not going to do much else. I think that whole Browns game, you can just strike that off the record because they looked terrible outside that first drive. Yeah. And Tennessee looked good, not going to lie. Mariota didn't get hurt, which was step one for him, and they looked smooth.
Yeah, so he was number three RB this week. I think the guy that everybody's talking about, the number four wide receiver, Marquise Brown, Hollywood.
Yeah, I mean, kind of touched on him already. It's just he only played 12 snaps. So, again, grain of salt with everything, but he's a great fit with Lamar Jackson's ability to throw downfield. I think he is probably going to be the number one option in that passing attack, kind like in a as far as value goes. Like if you combine his value of targets with the value of his targets with the amount he's going to get, I think he's basically the number one option, or at least he's probably the option you want the most shares of. It'll be interesting. I think he's going to have a lot of good games, a lot of meh games. He's kind of DeSean Jackson clone, so that's kind of what you're looking for from him.
I think we'll be talking about him again shortly too, with in waivers and probably another guy too. But I would like to talk to you, Jono, about this guy T.J. Hockenson, rookie number 88 for tight end for Detroit. Looks like he's the main target for Matthew Stafford.
Oh boy, Hockenson looks like the real deal. He impressed in preseason, but he came out and did it and looked great. Like his blocking was amazing as well. Yards after the catch looked like a good target for Stafford. He could like continue this. I know everybody's got the thing against rookie tight ends, but boy, did he look good. And like you said, 9 targets, second to Danny Amendola of all people. And man.
So why'd you drop him before week one, Jonathan?
I didn't think he was going to get that many targets. I didn't really think they were going to get 9. He was going to get 9 targets in week one.
I just remember when you drafted him, everyone was like, oh, wow, Hockenson, really? Really? You're going to go with Hockenson?
And yeah.
2 days before the season started, you dropped him. Who'd you drop for? Delaney Walker?
Yeah.
Yeah, not too bad, but just hilarious how things work out.
Yep. It's okay. I'm going to blow all my fab on him. That's fine. Yeah. All $100.
I think we get $1,000.
Oh, then all $1,000.
All $1,000.
There you go. Drop it all week one on a tight end.
Yeah, right.
You got to save some money for Gardner Minshew, though.
Got to save some money for Marquise Brown, too. And there's a lot of other guys. There's a lot of guys to pick up. I'm sure you'll be discussing them. Some of these guys might be even on these lists. But, Kev, is there anybody on this list of the Sunday Pop performers that stick out for you that you'd like to talk about for a minute?
Yeah, I mean, obviously your studs, Christian McCaffrey, is incredible. He's the GOAT. Or not really, but he's just amazing to watch. He's the Panthers ran like a on one of his touchdowns, they ran like a direct snap to him, and he ran the read option with Cam Newton, which was like the coolest thing I've seen in a while. Just wanted to throw that out there. Who else on this list had a great game? Dalvin Cook is someone that I've been touting all preseason. He looked fantastic. The Vikings look like they're going to maul people up front.
Number 5 this week, yes.
Yeah, Kirk Cousins only had 10 pass attempts, so a lot of that's game flow. But, I mean, when Dalvin Cook is rushing, I think he had 21 carries for like 114. Yeah, he looks good. He's paying off for people who picked him first round.
What about you, Jono? Anybody in this list that stick out? You know, like to?
I mean, I myself was surprised that Marlon Mack did so well. A lot of people were very, very down on him after Luck retired, but he continued what he was doing last season. He did well, even though the Colts weren't winning, which is a big, big thing for him going forward. But yeah, no, Mac was surprising.
Yeah, number 4 fantasy performance. If there's anybody else, for me personally, I always kind of thought John Ross would come out. I think definitely people are going to have to definitely hit the add button for John Ross. Why don't we get into those waivers and drops? Jono, you're the writer for waivers. Let's get into waivers, Jono. Who are we picking up this week?
The Brown and Ross were the top two receiver waiver ads this week for obvious reasons. I guess a big one now with guys that would have been AP, which we already touched on. One of the main ones I had was Matt Stafford. People kind of left him for dead after this year, saying the Lions weren't going to throw, but he threw 45 times yesterday. He had 385 yards and three touchdowns. And that's with Kenny Galladay only having 42 yards. The Lions receiving core is deep, and they have a good offense. And it worked really well. Granted, it was the Cardinals, but it worked well. And 26% owned, but Stafford's better than Derek Carr and like whoever else is playing. Jeez, Cousins only threw 10 passes yesterday, and he's owned more than Stafford. Nah, give me Matt Stafford all day.
Hmm. You got an RB to pass along for us?
If you need a deeper league, I guess I guess Ronald Jones. He did look like the best Tampa Bay back yesterday. He had 75 yards. It was the best he's looked in the NFL. And if you need anybody in that backfield, it would have to be Jones at this point, unless you're in a full PPR league and you want to go with Dare Ogunbowale, but he only had the five targets. He didn't really do much with them.
And we already talked about the wide receivers. What about tight ends? You've got a good tight end. Besides Hawkinson, because we already talked about him.
Yes, besides Hawkinson, Vernon Davis. He looked good, turned back the clock, hurdled the defender, looked fast. And as long as Jordan Reed is the quote-unquote starter with his, let's say, checkered injury past, Davis is always going to be relevant so long as he's starting.
Mm. And now for the downside, Kev. Who are we dropping this week?
So many people. It happens every year, right? Like week one, you go in and you hope such and such has some kind of role in this offense, and it turns out he has absolutely no role in the offense. Main guys I'm dropping or looking at dropping if you're in a really shallow league. Surprisingly, so Darwin Thompson is for sure a drop. Surprisingly, Daryl Henderson, you could probably get away with dropping him. Like probably like Malcolm Brown looks like he's going to be the backup there. Geronimo Allison is someone that's, I mean, he just didn't look like he's going to have a share of the offense. Who else is there? I guess among quarterbacks, like a lot of guys proved that they're streamer-only candidates. Trubisky was awful. Garoppolo did not deserve to win that game. Jameis, I'm still holding on to just because he is just that kind of unpredictable. I think last year he did the same exact thing, came out, stunk it up game one, game two threw for 4 touchdowns. So he's still someone that I'll hang on to because that offense is still scary. Mike Evans wasn't right that week, so... we'll kind of see on him.
Right.
Am I missing anyone? Anyone you guys can think of?
I don't know.
People that are holding Kyle Rudolph can drop him. He had one target for nothing.
Yeah, but I mean, that's tough because Diggs and Thielen each had like 2 and 3 targets. It was just it's hard to really say anything about Rudolph on that. Like, I wasn't high on Rudolph to begin with, but if you were high on him, like, you know, you can't really drop him just off that.
That's true.
But do we have to, I mean, I want to get back to Geronimo Allison. Don't you think people should just hang on one more week just to see? I mean, it was just week one, and let's face it, it showed that Trubisky and Aaron Rodgers did not, you know, play any preseason.
Mean, obviously, like, if you want to be safe with it, I mean, you can hold on to him another week, but if you just look at his 0 targets in a game where Rodgers threw the ball a decent amount, it's kind of sketchy. I mean, the same kind of logic goes for a guy like Anthony Miller.
Right.
He threw the ball a ton, and Anthony Miller got, I think, 2 targets. So it's just, if you look at target shares, yeah, theoretically the coaching staff could turn around and say, hey, we need to get this guy the ball more. But I just don't really see it. I think Marquez Valdez-Scantling proved he's better. If Jimmy Graham is going to be somewhat rejuvenated, then Allison really kind of gets phased out of that offense.
Mm, good point. There was some. I feel bad because, you know, I did a reach for Darwin Thompson, and now that's all gone. So that has to be put aside.
Oh, drop Zay Jones. Zay Jones is
Zay Jones. Yeah, there was a lot of things going on, but you can't drop Robbie Anderson.
No, you can't drop Robbie Anderson. He had a strained calf. He was playing. He's getting shadowed by Tre'Davious White. He'll have better days.
I want to talk to you about DK Metcalf and AJ Brown, the two freaks. Did you see that picture of him, Kev? AJ Brown did pretty good. He got 3 receptions, 100 yards. Pretty good. Pretty good at it.
Yeah, AJ Brown is pretty good, but I mean, the Titans have a lot of guys who are all pretty average, so it's hard to really say who's going to do much week to week, except that Mariota loves Delanie Walker, so that's one guy I trust. But I mean, they still got Corey Davis, even though he put up the fat donut.
He did, a big fat donut. What do you make of him? Is he droppable? No?
No, he's definitely not droppable. I think he's too talented to be droppable, but he's on the bubble. I don't know. I think Corey Davis is, like, not worn out his welcome with the team, but their first round draft pick, and then for them to bring in so much other receiving talent doesn't really it's not really a vote of confidence for him.
Jonah, would he be better on another team?
Probably. Like Kevin said, he's a talented player. Just can't seem to, whatever the reason, get it together with Mariota. Can't stick in, what is it, his third or fourth different offensive scheme right now. Just unless something drastically changes and he somehow figures it out with Mariota, he's not going to live up to the draft, his real life draft position and his fantasy draft position for the last 2 years.
I'd like to talk to you a little bit about John. I'll start with you. Kyler Murray, what do you think of his first outing?
I mean, the numbers look pretty at the end of the day, but that was ugly for the first part of that game. He put it together in the fourth. He did throw a couple of nice dimes to Larry Fitzgerald, and the offense did start to move close to the end of the game. But boy, that was rough for his owners in the first half, I tell you. He's on my bench in one of my leagues. It was at one point it was him and Cam, so I was just crying in my corner. But yeah, I think as the games go on, he'll get more consistent. He'll figure it out, and he will end up being a pretty good quarterback for fantasy purposes.
And of course, I wanted to go into a little bit more about because I talked about AJ Brown but DK Metcalf, Kev, and Tyler Lockett. Tyler Lockett didn't see a target until late in the game. He scored a touchdown too, but it looks like DK Metcalf is the man.
Yeah, that was strange. Not really sure what to make of that. I'd like to see another week. I feel like that was just a strange game. Thought the Seahawks should have taken care of business, but I feel like often they have these kind of weird games where they play down to the level of their competition. Lockett, I mean, of course, was ultra efficient with his targets, still got a 44-yard touchdown. Going forward, I'm still expecting Lockett to be the guy there, but Metcalf's usage is a little interesting to me. Something to monitor.
Right. Further on, looking at some other players here talk about some running backs here as soon as I get them up here. Jono, this is kind of important. Todd Gurley and his usage. Some question marks still about this.
Yeah, things weren't looking good for Gurley through the first three quarters. It almost looked like Malcolm Brown was the main back for a while. He scored the touchdown. He was getting a lot of important carries. And then Gurley ended up going off for 64 yards, I believe, in the fourth quarter. It kind of calmed his owner's fears. But yeah, those first three quarters, it almost looked like they were splitting it and they were severely limiting Gurley's carries, even if they did say he was going to play a full complement.
Mm-hmm. And Kevin, who's going to ultimately win? I guess Ronald Jones is the man now. As Jono says, he's a good spec waiver pickup based on his performance. Are we a little closer to knowing what that backfield is going to be all about?
A little bit closer. I mean, it's a weird game that, you know, Jameis threw three interceptions, probably should have thrown like five or six, but. I think Ronald Jones by far looked like the most impressive runner out there. Also was useful as a pass catcher. So theoretically, he should be the guy going forward. But you never know with NFL coaches. I would probably pick up Ronald Jones if I could. But it's still a little hard to say. I mean, the one thing we know for sure is that like Dare Ogunbowale probably is not going to be much of a factor.
Right. Jono, what about the Philadelphia backfield? Darren Sproles got a lot of work, more than I expected.
Sproles is almost like the passing back version of Gore, where you just know if he's on a team, he's going to take a bunch of work and ruin everybody else's fun. But like, I think this was coming through the entire offseason that the Eagles backfield was going to be a committee, and people didn't want to believe it. People always want to go with the rookie running back, say he's going to take over. And I mean, Miles Sanders did get 11 carries. He led the backfield, but he didn't do anything with those carries. Mm. He 2.3 yards a carry. Sproles averaged 5.2. Jordan Howard averaged 7 yards a carry somehow. And yeah, Sanders didn't look really good. And this is still going to be a committee regardless. So
it's like I say, it's the year of the vet. And yeah, every time you want to bury Sproles, Gore, McCoy. Well, maybe not McCoy so much, but those other two, they've been around, you know, for such a long time. And Kev, your man, Jordan Howard, he's kind of like in the shadows.
I mean, it's just Doug Peterson is just going to do this. Like, I don't know why anyone thought it was going to be different. He's going to rotate running backs however he's fit based on situation and whoever's got the hot hand. So, I mean, Miles Sanders could have had a bigger day. He had, like, I think he had a touchdown called back on a penalty, and then he had two carries from, like, the two-yard line and couldn't punch either of them in. So he could have had a bigger day. So I would still be pretty high on Sanders out of those guys, but it's going to be frustrating all season because that's just how Doug Peterson goes.
Jono, people got what they paid for with Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah, I mean, Le'Veon is still Le'Veon. Regardless of team, he's going to get a ton of work, and the passing work always boosts his value. I know the Jets obviously don't have the offense that the Steelers do, but Le'Veon's still Le'Veon, and volume has always been the key in fantasy, and he will continue to get that until he either gets hurt or holds out again. So,
Kev, the Devin Singletary, is he going to emerge? He did end up with what did he get? He got 70 rushing yards and 28 receiving yards.
Yeah, and I was listening to a podcast. Obviously, I didn't watch this game. I have better things to do with my life. But I was listening to a podcast, and they mentioned that Devin Singletary actually didn't get a touch until like the end of the third quarter. So he put up these 98 yards within a quarter and then some. So I think it's – I mean, if the Bills are trying to win games, he should probably see an uptick of target or of touches going forward. So Singletary is someone that I'm pretty excited about. Based on the highlights, he looked pretty good. And Gore had, like, what, 10 carries for 20 yards. So it's only a matter of time.
Yeah. And I guess we can go back a little bit to the what we saw on the Thursday night game. With, I guess it's not the Packers and the Bears, they're both their offenses. As far as the running game went, it looked like a very shaky game. Like, it seemed like, to me, it really looked like a preseason game. That these teams weren't really playing at their full potential. Cause I didn't see a lot from Aaron Jones or Jamal Williams, although Aaron Jones got more of the carries, but, David Montgomery, looked pretty ordinary, Kev.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say he looked ordinary. He looked pretty good as a runner, but as far as his workload, that was less than ideal. Tariq Cohen was on the field a ton. Although he was like mostly playing slot receiver, so that was kind of weird. But Mike Davis was actually getting used a lot. I think you're going to slowly see Montgomery get eased into it. But this was kind of the worry when people drafted him high, was that they weren't going to immediately hand the reins. And looks like that's what's going to happen.
Jono, what do we make of Raheem Mostert?
He's a backup running back for the 49ers. I mean, I know that Coleman's out 2 to 6 weeks now, officially with a high ankle sprain. Mostert's the backup, but Breda's still the guy. Mostert will probably be pretty annoying if they want to keep Breda healthy, but he's still just the backup. If you have Breda, I could see handcuffing, but standalone value, I'm not going to pick up Raheem Mostert.
And I guess we got to scrape the bottom eventually. Kenyon Drake, Kev, 12 yards rushing, 15 yards through the air. We saw one of our guys in our league drop Kalen Ballage, and boy, what a good move. And to pick up Rob Gronkowski, who isn't even playing. It just shows you how bad.
He will be. Don't you worry. He will be.
But first of all, let's talk about Kenyon Drake, Kev. And Ballage. I guess you can put them in the package. What do you think? Are we...
I mean, it's such a... so hard to judge any Dolphins players given that their front office doesn't want to win games. On top of that, the Ravens were literally just, they were blowing up everything that the Dolphins wanted to do. So you can't really blame Ballage. I mean, 5 yards, five carries, -1 yard. That to me doesn't really seem, I mean, I watched the game. It wasn't really like his fault. Like they were just blowing him up at the point of contact every single play, him and Drake. There's a chance that they might do something next week, but the Patriots defense is actually pretty solid. So I don't know. It's just like, they're going to be bad. They're going to be in a bad offense, but, if Fitzpatrick can kind of get things going a little bit, I still think Drake has some kind of pass catching value. Ballage, I wasn't really in on anyway.
No, I think that, and, I think there might be better days ahead because, the players are, players on the Miami Dolphins are getting a little bit antsy as we, if anybody's been reading the Twitter feeds and in the news, the Miami players are grumbling that someone want to be traded. I don't know whether they've gone on record as saying that, but, I don't know whether it's rumor. Has anybody gone on record, Kev, that you know?
No, no one's actually requested to trade, but yeah, it's an ugly situation.
Really bad. Really bad. That's not the way you tank. You don't purposely, you know, you see how the Browns, because you see it all. I don't like this idea of they should have a lottery system or something to prevent tanking. That's what they do in the NBA, because that's what teams were doing before they brought in. That's why they brought in the lottery, so teams wouldn't purposely tank, you know, so that there wouldn't be, because it's bad for the league if, you know, getting draft picks based on your, I know they want parity and everything, but teams are using this to get their own way. I don't know, Jono, when it comes to the Patriots, they do it a whole different way, but what do you think about this situation?
I mean, tanking. It's rare to see a team tank so, I guess, so blatantly in the NFL, just for them to completely give up and feel, you know, the team closest to ever answering the question, what NFL team can Alabama beat? But yeah, it's bad. And it's a bad look for the league. But until, like you said, they do something about the lottery rules, there's nothing against this specifically, but it looks bad all around either way.
Yeah. I think if it gets out of hand, they're going to, well, it looks like it's getting out of hand, what with the Miami Dolphins, but
it's okay. The Dolphins have the Pats in Miami next week, and I'm sure it's going to be the yearly Dolphins beat the Pats at home game. I'm sure there's going to be some dumb miracle at the end of the game where, I don't know, Albert Wilson runs a 95-yard end around to win the game. Like, I don't know. It's going to be something stupid.
It's true. It's very unusual when, if you look at the records of Miami and the Pats, when the Pats visit Miami, the Dolphins do upset them. But I don't know about this year. Antonio Brown's getting it. Well, I mean, this is, you know, I don't know how many Miami Dolphins fans are going to show up at this game. Really. I mean, it's, yeesh. Would you want to go, if you were a Dolphins fan, would you really want to go and see your team get slaughtered?
I'd go for the cheap tickets.
I'd boycott.
You'd boycott. Would you care?
Come on. They're not trying to be productive. They're not trying to, like, I get what they're doing. Like, it's a tank job. At the same time, like, it's just too blatant of a tank job. It's just, like, disgusting. And this is not a sport like basketball where, you know, people are putting their lives on the line, basically. Like, linebackers are going out, like, legitimately could suffer career-ending injuries and stuff like that. Like, I wouldn't want to play, and if I was a fan, I wouldn't want to watch it.
Yeah, you want to put out a good team, and, yeah, because, exactly, Kev, you hit the nail right on the head there, because it is one of the roughest sports in the world. Let's face it, like, people have broken bones on a weekly basis, you know, and not only just career-ending, but, you know, life-threatening injuries. You know, when some of these guys are getting in their 50s, you know, man, they have troubles walking and things like that. You know, they end up, you know, some players, you know, they're on their feet and everything. You know, we always see them getting interviewed, but you see a lot of guys, a lot of the old guys, you know, they're, you know, coming out there and they're, you know, a bit bent over and they're not as in good shape when they start getting up in years after they've left the game. All those batterings they've taken as a youth just catch up with them in their latter days. So it's one of those things. But I don't know. But what are they now? 16-point favorites, the Patriots?
Is that all?
16.5.
I know. I thought that was kind of low to me. I mean, well, you could take Miami and the points, and you might win because, like you say, they're the Patriots go down there and they don't do as well as you'd expect.
If you take Miami and the points, like you just have a gambling problem. Like,
what would the payout be on that bet, anyways? Like, you better be making like a bunch of money if you're making that bet.
Just the money line. You might get like the money line is probably like plus, I don't know, 800 plus 1200, something crazy.
Well, enough for it to actually happen.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, Miami could beat the spread.
No, they could beat the spread. Yeah, but. That's what I'm saying. If you're banking on that, if you're putting your hard-earned money on
them beating the spread,
like, no, not going to happen.
Yeah, well, yeah, 16.
Let me check what the percentage bets are on the Patriots right now. It's got to be like 9.
Are you checking that out now?
Let's see if I can find it. You guys go ahead and talk first.
But it is, you know, it is a fantastic. I can't imagine how the Patriots have all these good players. I think they showed a graphic I read somewhere that there are four players in history that have had 1600 yard seasons, and they yep. are and three and there's four players in history, and three of them are currently players that are active, and the Patriots have three of them.
Yep. Fun times.
I forget who the fourth is.
Julio, no?
That's right, Julio.
All right, so the line I've got right here is Patriots by 18.5.
18.5. That's more like it.
70% is on it, or 70% of the public is on that. If you wanted to bet Miami to win, it would be plus 1140.
Wow.
Bet $100, win $1,100.
I'll bet a buck.
You would win 114 bucks.
You'd win 14 bucks.
Yeah. 140.
Yeah.
Is that right? I have that wrong.
Not bad for a dollar bet, though.
Anyway,
I'd put a buck on it. Why not? It just wouldn't happen. You'd be throwing away a buck. But yeah, you can't even get it. Who is that guy? Who is that guy that put a quarter on his put 25 cents on a DFS and it turned out to be awesome in our Slack chat?
I don't know.
Somebody put a quarter on it. It looked like a pretty good lineup he put in.
Oh, it was John Lopresto. He put it in a 25-cent league, though, so he won like nothing.
Oh, tough break.
Shout out to John.
Any other issues, league issues that we need? Oh, there's one guy I want to talk about, and that is, the game between the Chargers and the Indianapolis Colts yesterday on Sunday. The Chargers were without their kicker. And they had to use their punter to do dual duties. Now, this punter, in the Canadian Football League, it's very common for punters and kickers to do both duties. And this guy was from the BC Lions, Ty Long. And he got all the extra points, and I think he kicked one field goal. And he did it because Michael Badgley was out. And he did the whole job from the BC British Columbia Lions. He was quite happy being from. I've seen a lot of BC Lions games in my time being from Vancouver, so I was quite happy that a CFL guy, comes in to do it. And you know something, if Badgley doesn't come back, they don't have to really get another kicker because it kind of saves a roster spot by having a guy with that's a hybrid kicker and punter at the same time. I don't know why they don't do that. Get hybrids, Actually, CFL kickers are actually probably a lot better than people think. CFL kickers are pretty good. So if they get a kicker from the CFL, they do well. Any thoughts on Ty Long, Jono? You're from CFL game. Kickers are pretty good from CFL.
Aren't the goalposts like far wider?
Yeah.
And at the front of the end zone?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I don't really follow the CFL, but we're talking about kickers, man. Come on.
I know we're talking about kickers, but kickers are people too. And
we're talking about a punter. Never mind a kicker. We're talking about a punter. Come on.
I know we're talking about a Yes, it's true. We're talking about a punter. But he outkicked Vinatieri. Vinatieri was just awful. Crickets. I get crickets whenever we talk about kickers. But we got to talk about kickers because people have kickers in fantasy. So we got to talk about kickers sometimes. It's kind of important.
That's their problem. They shouldn't.
Some people like to play traditional leagues with the kicker. Kickers, we get really, really, I knew this was going to happen once we got rid of kickers, is that we look down our noses at people who have kickers. It's just not, it's not right.
Rid of kickers. That happened before we got rid of kickers.
No, that's not true. That's not true. We always started, I remember going back, there was never this talk about kickers until later, like after 2012 or 2014. That's when I noticed that people started wanting to get rid of kickers. I remember 2012, I don't remember anybody talking about, kicker was just a normal thing. Everybody had a kicker. And you just got to pick a kicker. It was true. People started streaming. Now people want to get rid of defenses. So what do you think about that? There's no defenses in the Scott Fishbowl. We don't want to look down at people who, defenses.
You don't want to have people streaming. Everyone wants to stream.
And I think that's the thing though, isn't it? Whenever you're streaming, that means you're not playing, you're playing, but it is a game after all. So streaming, they should make restrictions on it. Do you think it should be just pure defenses? Jono, any thoughts on defenses and kickers? Punters, that is.
I mean, I grew up playing with both. I don't, in or out, it doesn't really matter. The game is still the same. It's just another position you have to draft for. It's the same research that goes into it either way. Just matchups at the end of the day.
Yeah, it is. I mean, they make us rank them. So
that's such a mature take. I'm just
like, just draft, man.
Well, you guys pick a topic then to finish off the show, because we're almost at the end here.
Josh Gordon's touchdown catch and run was great.
Yes, it was.
Such a good touchdown. Classic flash.
Yeah, he was good. Yeah, he was good. But I kind of feel bad for Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh looked, you know what? I don't know about you guys, but Kev, do you think that they kind of miss Antonio Brown? The offense looks totally different without him.
Do they miss an all-pro wide receiver? Yeah, I think they
No, I mean,
let's talk about the poor center that got left by himself.
Oh, man.
On that snap.
I think I've done that one time in like practice. It's embarrassing, man. You feel so alone in the world. It's like 10 people are just like, dude, what are you doing? It's so bad.
Poor guy. But that was a great highlight.
It was just bad because they were down like 30-3, and then everyone was just laughing at him. Like, that hurt me to see.
I kind of missed that. You're going to have to give me the details, so I'm going to have to look at, because I didn't watch the entire game. When it was 33-3, I don't know, maybe I overlooked it, but it was...
Just Google penalty on everybody but the center once we're done here.
Okay.
That's what the ref called.
Yeah.
Penalty on everybody but the center.
Oh, but okay. But I do want to talk about the Pittsburgh offense, though, without Antonio Brown. It wasn't a good day for the Steelers. They looked very bad. No, well, I mean, they just couldn't get anything going. I mean, I actually, to be honest, I kind of thought Jalen Samuels would have a little bit more. I thought he would be a little bit more involved in their offense. Not Switzer.
I feel like Jalen Samuels was involved in the offense.
Not much. Not as much as a guy like Switzer. Switzer's, you know.
I don't know. Just weird game. Like, I don't know how much you can really, like, are the Steelers going to score 3 points a week every game? Like, I really doubt it. So let's see what happens next week.
To me, Moncrief is trash. I mean, he can't catch a ball. James Washington is the guy. I always thought James Washington was, I couldn't believe it that the Steelers would make Moncrief the number two wide. That's going to change. I know it's going to change. I don't know what your thoughts are. Well,
you heard it first. I think it'll change later in the season. Like, if I own Moncrief, which I think I do in one league, I'm hoping he has like 3 good games and I trade him, and that's Washington starts taking the role.
I admit too, I was high on Moncrief. I was thinking, well, I guess the Steelers know better than me. Because, I mean, I see all this action with James Washington. Like, wow, this guy looks like the number two, you know. And then it's Moncrief. And I thought, well, maybe they, you know, maybe Moncrief, they do know. They know their stuff better than me. But, I don't know, it doesn't seem to look that way. How's it, Jono?
Like Kevin said earlier, you can't really judge the Pittsburgh offense on whatever happened last night. They're not going to score 3 points a game for the rest of the season. I'd give it another couple games before really, really judging what the offense is about.
All right. Well, that about wraps it up for our week one. We're still working out the bugs for this because we're not used to doing it on Tuesday, because we always used to do our podcast on Thursday after the Thursday night games. And then we'd have a weekend preview of things. It's kind of weird doing a review and then looking ahead like we used to do. So, but I don't know. It's still kind of fun. We'll work it out. Work out the bugs and have a proper system for you all who follow the Fantasy Edge. But I want to thank Jono and Kevin for joining us on the Fantasy Edge. I'm Richard Seville. Be sure to check out the Fantasy Six Pack Hour with Joe Bond and AJ Applegarth. They will have the preview this week, and you'll be able to follow their starts and sits and so forth when that comes along. But we hope it was an enlightening program. But join us next week for the Fantasy Edge. Take care, everybody, and good luck in week 2.